This is going to be the greatest radio show in the history of the world.
It's going to be lit.
I got so much love for our radio program.
Bickley and Murata.
Welcome to the greatest radio show in the history of the universe.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
This is the greatest radio show of all time.
Bickley and Murata. This is the greatest
show. You're listening to the greatest radio show that has ever existed.
The greatest of all time. I can feel it right now.
The greatest thing ever.
It is.
Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit.
It's the greatest thing in the world.
Happy Friday, all you Valley sports fans, and welcome to the wackiest, weirdest, strangest, most bizarre sports market on the planet. A place where championships do not reign, in a baseball town that cannot grow a grass field. Welcome to Phoenix, Arizona 2018.
I heard they're putting another roof on the place, too.
Doubling up, Vinny?
Yes.
Is that what they're doing? You can imagine what kind of mood I'm in today.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to begin today's show with another joke, just like I did yesterday. Okay? And it's going to do with an obituary again.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yesterday, I read that obituary from that guy who died in Indiana, and his wife just eviscerated him in a good-natured way in the obituary, and it went viral. It was the way all obituaries should be, pointing out the absurdity of the departed. The beautiful absurdity. Mm-hmm. There's a Buffalo Bills fan named Lee Merkel who just passed away. And in his obituary, he has one final request. He is requesting that all six Buffalo Bills offensive linemen serve as his pallbearers so they can let him down one last time.
That joke is
hello, everybody.
That joke is as old as me and you put together.
All right. Look, it's in his obituary. I don't know. I don't care how old it is. Jared tells jokes that are 50 years old. Right, Karnak?
I did not know that.
Hold on. Let me pull up the Bills Wikipedia page to see who's owning them these days.
Oh.
Never heard that one before,
yeah,
either.
Okay. Now that's a trend that should go away. That was really funny the first 15 times. But, I mean, come on. Huh. All right. Let's start the show, Jared.
The Splash. Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
All right. On a beautiful Friday afternoon, morning in the Valley, the Arizona Diamondbacks, story number one, they're going to install a synthetic field turf into Chase Field. Because the grass cannot grow, because the grass is dangerous, because they imply the grass might be responsible for some lower body fatigue, hamstring injuries. And on it goes with Chase Field.
It's like Milli Vanilli always said, blame it on the grass. Actually, they just lip-synced it, but you get the point.
Didn't a lot of people say that at Woodstock? Okay, yeah, there's a recent reference for you. Yeah! All right, we're going to get into that momentarily.
Yeah, they become just the third Major League Baseball team next year that will play on an artificial surface. Not exactly a club you want to be in my opinion, but
no,
hey, what do I know about that?
No, I agree. But hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Phoenix, Arizona, great American baseball town, can't grow a grass field. All right, item number two, the Arizona Cardinals back in action this weekend in Minnesota. Steve Keim this morning kind of refuted trade rumors we heard earlier in the week. Okay?
Yes, he did.
It's a big weekend for the Cardinals stars, and I mean David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald. They need to declare their greatness on Sunday, in my opinion.
It would be nice if they did that. It would certainly instill a little bit of confidence moving forward for this offense that has struggled so mightily. But like I said on yesterday's show, Bick, I don't care if it's Larry Fitzgerald or David Johnson or Josh Rosen or Ricky Seals-Jones or Kendall Wright.
Yeah.
Somebody has to have a big game offensively. Just to show that there's some life in that unit, you know?
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting road test for this football team. I've got some thoughts on David Johnson. I think Wolf brought up some good stuff this morning about where he needs to go with his leadership. And I think it's a fascinating topic. We're going to get into that shortly. The Phoenix Suns, squeezing this in here. James Jones is going to speak today. He's going to join us today. to speak about his vision for the Phoenix Suns, where he's going, maybe his thoughts on what's gone down. Maybe not.
Yeah, he'll join us at 12:30 today. He's going to speak to the media at 10:30, so we'll have some reference there as we're almost to game week. Opening week of the season will be next week in the NBA, and the Suns have already wrapped up their preseason schedule. Now it's about paring down the roster and final preparations, which could include a healthy Devin Booker for Wednesday night.
All right, so opening night on Wednesday. I'm looking forward to this, seeing this stuff happen for real.
Seems like it's been a long time in the making, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And you know what happens? Teams that don't make the playoffs, they're done by what? Late April? Early
Not
May?
Even. Like
Not even.
Mid-April.
That.
Mid-April?
Mid-April?
Yeah.
It's been a long time since we've seen this team play a game that actually mattered.
That
Phoenix
is true.
Phoenix Suns!
That's right.
You should delete that one, too.
Thursday night football last night. The Philadelphia Eagles pounded the New York football Giants. Giants are a mess.
That is a kind way of putting it. They are really not a good football team. Outside of Saquon Barkley, he's fun to watch. 34-13, the final. The game was 24-6 at halftime. A couple of themes continued for the Giants. Eli Manning. If I read one, I probably read 20 headlines from around the country. National sites, local New York sites, all saying it's time for the Giants to move on from Eli Manning. He hasn't played well, obviously. Nobody else is playing well around him either. The other theme that continued was the "Hey, look at me!" Odell Beckham Jr. saga continued. Leaves the first half early. Again, getting into it with inanimate objects. Overly emotional.
I don't. This guy just burns weirdly hot.
I am not a Giants fan, and he's exhausting.
Yes, that's a good word for him.
Actually, rooting for that team.
That's a good word for him.
Yeah.
Exhausting. Burns strangely hot. Major League Baseball playoffs begin tonight in Milwaukee. The Dodgers and the Brewers.
Brewers going for 12 straight wins going back to the regular season.
Yeah.
Which means if they get it, there's a burger chain in Milwaukee that's going to give away free burgers.
Yeah.
The last time they did that was 1987, and I read a story today about some dude who still has a burger from that giveaway frozen.
And sometime during the middle of the series, Kristen Yelich is going to walk into a taco shop and not get served. That's what we're going to get from Milwaukee. Just like what happened with Giannis. It's a great classic, small market, humble place, low ceiling place versus glitzy LA.
Yeah. Clayton Kershaw on the mound for the Dodgers. And the Brewers are going with an actual starting pitcher. Gio Gonzalez is going to start. We'll see how long they rely on the bullpen.
Yeah. The Astros get their wish. They get to play primetime baseball on Saturday. They open up against the Red Sox. So the championship series have arrived. I guess it's going to be fun. I don't know. It's not drawing me in like previous Final Fours.
Yeah, I think baseball could use a couple of memorable series here. Competitive both ways.
Yeah. There have been a real lack of endgame heroics, just stuff. You know what I mean? Just that, wow, I can't believe it. Stuff that makes you go, baseball's postseason rules. We haven't had a lot of that.
No, not this year.
All right, finally.
But there's still time.
College football this weekend, ASU not in action, but the Wildcats, Jarrett Carlin's Wildcats, in action tonight in Utah against a very stout defensive team that might just pound your Wildcats into submission there, Jarrett.
Yeah, Utah was fighting for their lives last week, and they just took it to Stanford in a game that surprised me. Stanford's a strange team this year. You could make that claim for a lot of teams in the Pac-12, including Arizona. In the way the season started for the Wildcats, and if you want to hold it up against the way the season started for ASU, both of these teams have the same record. And one's trending in the right direction and one's not.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
Utah has a better record in the Pac-12, by the way.
Thank you for that correction.
Dynamite drop.
All right, there you go. Today
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school's really paying off.
There you go. Those are your splash items for today. We're going to have Danny Gonzalez on the program today. Very much looking forward to that. We told you about James Jones. And, of course, the sports kebab because it's a Friday. But this morning, I heard the latest about the Diamondbacks. B1K.
Is that a new boy band?
Could be.
I love those guys.
Yeah. It could
be. Can't wait till they break up and all do solo projects. And then get together 3 years later for a reunion tour.
Right, and they all have their shows on Disney, right?
Yeah, okay.
The Diamondbacks have announced they are ripping up the grass out of Chase Field. They are putting in a new synthetic field, turf, something. All right? We'll start by saying this. Grass has come a long way in recent years. Synthetic stuff has come a long way in recent years. You can walk on football fields, and it's like walking on mattresses. Some of it's weird. You walk into some football stadiums, and you'll see fake grass that's cushy and feels real, but it's surrounded by rubber ground-up tire particles that are alleged to cause cancer. But that hasn't been proven yet. But you run on it, and that stuff flies up while you're running, and it softens the blow when you fall on it. Baseball field, so this stuff's come a long way. But symbolically, doesn't this story just feel perfectly Diamondback to you?
Yeah, I know they're probably frustrated with it. Late in the season, it was pretty much a common occurrence for outfield patches where, you know, the outfielders were positioned on a regular basis. Those patches would die and they'd be kind of an eyesore. So they went to a different kind of grass. It actually stayed green this past year, but Derek Hall put it, it wasn't safe. It wasn't good footing. Players were concerned about it. Here was Derek Hall. He called into Doug and Wolf this morning talking about this decision the Diamondbacks have made to go to the synthetic turf.
I mean, this move and the entire organization was behind it. Baseball has done research all year long, along with Shaw. They've been out to Auburn University to test all of this. This isn't like what you've seen in the past. It's not like an AstroTurf. You know, this is this synthetic grass is going to be consistent. It's going to look great. It's about fan experience, where I have heard for the last couple of years how hot and miserable fans have been in this building, and that's because we've had to keep direct sunlight on this grass that's not growing right anyways. And by the time you shut the roof at 3 or 4 o'clock and try and crank the AC, it doesn't cool it off. So it's fan experience. It's player safety. You know, we're not going to have the slippage. We're not, you know, it's going to actually improve the health of our players. This is not an easy decision, but it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, here's more from Derek Hall about his personal preference, but the reality of the situation.
I'm a purist. I'm a traditionalist. This is something that I would say for over a decade we've been, you know, considering with all of our options. But I'm with you. You know, I like baseball on the grass, especially if it's safe and it's healthy. And we have tried and tried. It's been dangerous. It's been hard and fast, and it's been uncomfortable in the building. There's so many reasons.
The timing of this, for the purposes of our show, is interesting because you've been on your kick lately about
synthetic baseball.
Basically, synthetic baseball is how you've termed it, without using that phrase until now. Indoor baseball, it cheapens your experience as a viewer. I've had fun with it. So when I heard this story today, I went, uh-oh.
Yeah.
I'm worried about Bic.
Yeah.
He might go over the edge on this one.
I've tried not to. I really have, because I'm trying to look at what is real and what is just kind of like rattling between my ears, my head on this whole issue. And yeah, Chase Field's grass hasn't always been that good. The games I've been to, I do agree that later in the season, the air just kind of lingers and maybe they can't keep it cool. I'll tell you who it's not a good day for: Diamondbacks groundskeeping crew.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good day for us because the next time we do a live broadcast from home plate, there will not be lawnmowers going by. That's not going to happen.
That is true.
Now, the field's going to look the same. They're going to have the dirt path between home plate and the mound. So the aesthetics of Chase Field, the way it's set up.
And that's only one of two ballparks that has that, I believe.
That's right. Do you like that, by the way? I've never liked that. And I'm not trying to pile onto Chase Field. I'm just saying, in general, I like a baseball diamond to be cleaner. I don't want.
But that's the way they always used to be.
Okay.
I don't like it.
These are just aesthetics.
I don't dislike it.
Yeah. So is it a big deal that they're not playing on real grass anymore? No, but it kind of is another layer to this match between a baseball team and a stadium that's ranked somewhere between irritant and albatross right now.
Yeah, I think big picture, does it really matter? If it's going to be a better playing experience, if it's going to be a better viewing experience because they don't have to keep the stadium roof open during the heat of the day anymore when the Diamondbacks are away to let the grass grow. I mean, those are probably the biggest factors. And I think grass plays an important role in baseball, we'll all agree, but it's a romantic role.
That's right.
I remember vividly the first time I ever went to a ball game. And actually, it was a Yankees game while they were playing at Shea Stadium when Yankee Stadium was getting rebuilt. And walking through the portal into the bowl of the stadium, and when your eyes see the green grass for the first time,
oh, yeah.
And you get the, you know, people always romanticize, oh, the smell of the clean cut grass. Yeah, it's romantic. It sounds great. Sounds poetic, but does it really mean anything?
Yeah.
In the grand scheme, no, not that much. And to Derek Hall's point, the advances that have been made in the synthetic turfs now, it'll probably look pretty real.
Yeah. I would, again, and I can't wait to kind of just see it. I hope it's a little on the brighter side, because a lot of the football field turf is on the darker side. But I'll tell you what, I don't know if you, there's certain ambiance of arenas, and again, this might be an older dude who grew up with a set of stadium experiences that represent the nostalgia in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you walk onto a football field on ground level during, after a game, near the end of a game, and the cleats that have torn up that grass field create a smell that is unmistakable.
Yes.
And if you're down by it, you know exactly what I'm talking mm-hmm. about. It's phenomenal.
Phenomenal is a strong word.
I like it. I really, really like it. When you go into a basketball venue, what is it? The
synthetic turf.
No, it's the thud of the ball on the floor, the squeaking of sneakers, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. The swish of the net.
Yeah.
When they weren't mic'd up beyond ridiculous levels. Okay. In Major League Baseball, what is that? What is the nostalgia? What is that? What is that ambiance that you're looking for? You know how I feel about the roof. That's, to me, that's the, but the grass, does it matter?
I kind of put both of those things in the same group. The reality of having a Major League Baseball team in Phoenix, Arizona says it's a necessary evil. You have to have a roof. You have to have a closed stadium with air conditioning. And listening to Derek Hall, you know, pinpoint all the issues in keeping this grass at a playable level and a safe level.
Yeah.
This sounds like it's a necessary evil of doing business, baseball business, in Phoenix, Arizona.
I guess. I mean, the fact that this has been an ongoing issue for as long as Derek Hall says it's been,
uh-huh.
I think it just shows more frustration. I mean, that I think that's what Derek Hall was expressing this morning, that this is, we don't want this, but we have to do this.
Yeah, in fact, he said there had to be a push put on him to convince him to make the change.
For 10 years, I'm telling you, I would say absolutely not. I mean, whenever it was recommended, because right. I don't like the thought of synthetic, right. You know, especially with baseball. But now that this technology has gotten to where it was, and we had several trips back east to the plant, the manufacturing plant, to you know, as I said, Auburn, to their looking at their research, they came out here and showed us what it would be like. We took players from Visalia, took them to a field that had this B1K, and saw just how great it was. And our players that tested it out went, wow, this is the best hop that we've ever seen and ever fielded. So, you know, there's too many reasons to do it.
No, the bottom line for most fans, I'll play another Derek Hall cut in a second. Doesn't matter what you're playing on. Avoid something that happened in September. Did the grass have anything to do with that? I don't know. But the fans just want to root for a winning ball club. That's consistent.
Here's what I think. I think that for people like us who grew up in an era when baseball mattered so much, that we would gather at baseball fields for pickup games. And you did that?
Yes.
I did that.
It's very hard to do, by the way.
Very hard to do, but back then baseball was so big that kids would congregate, hang out, or you could easily get a group together because that many people were into playing baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You'd go down to a little league field, and there'd be rocks and crevices and cracks and clumps in the outfield. Then you'd go to a Major League Baseball stadium, and you would see that, and you would juxtapose it with your own experience of what you played on. So to a generation of people that grew up playing baseball, this stuff is going to matter way more. Synthetic baseball, does it matter to a younger generation that doesn't really get out on the sandlot and play baseball? Probably not.
I mean, it's not going to affect them anyway, because if they're at the ballpark, they're not looking at the field. They're on their phones.
It's You know, it ties into a bigger picture, and we're going to get into this later, because I'm watching these baseball playoffs, and maybe it's just a temporary cyclical lack of competitive drama, lack of heroics, but it feels to me like everything about baseball is changing. Everything. Michael Kay, broadcaster in New York the other day, just went off on analytics relative to the Yankees and the decisions they made while getting eliminated by the Red Sox. And some of it was poignant and some of it was hysterical. Nonsensical.
I haven't heard the rant.
Okay, but it just speaks to this game that's kind of morphing and sliding into this other realm that none of us who love the game ever grew up with. And hey, it's cool. I mean, when it's good, it's still great. But it's just getting so different. Synthetic turfs, defensive shifts, nobody bunts, strikeouts are cool.
Opening pitch,
out-getters. Outgetters.
It has changed. There's no doubt about that. Here was one more from Derek Hall this morning with Doug and Wolf on what he believes the fans will feel about this new surface.
You know, I think fans will, in the end, they'll enjoy it. This is tough. And I think if I was a fan, I heard, what? You know, yeah. They're going to go synthetic? Of course my eyebrows are going to be raised, or I say they're crazy. But at the end of the day, this building's going to feel great. You know, during the hot summer months when fans come in here, it's always going to look good. Mm-hmm. It's always going to play the same. And our players, in our opinion, and from the research, are going to be healthier as a result.
It's funny because even with the advances, I think he hit on something there. The initial reaction from a typical fan is artificial turf, and they automatically think to 70s era AstroTurf, where all those cookie cutter baseball stadiums like Philly and Pittsburgh and Cincinnati had those hard, light green surfaces.
Ugh.
Didn't have full dirt infields. They just had the patches of dirt around the bases.
Disgusting.
Mm-hmm. That's what they think of. It's not like that anymore.
Was back in the era of stadium design when the bowl stadium, the multi-use bowl stadium, was in vogue. Build a stadium that looks like a big bowl that the baseball team and the football team can play in. Put in this awful artificial turf, and there you go. That's design. That was modern-day design in the 1980s.
Somebody tweeted us an interesting point. I thought the Diamondbacks were desperate to get out of this stadium.
Yeah.
And now they're renovating the whole field turf
stuff. Well, listen, think about the costs involved here. Think about the energy they'll save in air conditioning if they don't have to crank it full bore every day. Think about the watering expense that no longer applies. That, I'm sure, is significant. I was facetious about the groundskeeping crew. There's no way
the
Diamondbacks are not the type of organization that would be so cutthroat that they would just blow out the groundskeeping crew.
Well,
they
still have to have it.
I mean, I'm being facetious about
that. Still dirt upkeep.
So the
vacuuming. It just goes from mowing to vacuuming now.
You're right. Like a big Zamboni thing just right? And suddenly you get like a quarter clogged in the thing.
And even if they want to get out of that stadium, it's still years and years away. Why not make the best of it?
What do you think about it being directly tied to the health of the Diamondbacks or the attrition it might cause or the fatigue? Is there something to that? Because Derek Hall seemed to imply there was. He brought up safety, not anyone else.
Yeah, he talked about footing and such. Like, I don't have to go out there and play in it. So
yeah, so you don't care?
It doesn't matter to me.
So your groin's intact?
Well, I didn't say that either. All right.
Okay, fine.
Cardinals getting ready to take on the Vikings, and Bick wants somebody to step up and have a big game offensively. Can they do it? We'll get into that next. Bickley and Murata on this Football Friday from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
It's all the above. Like I just said, and it's all about playing in unison. Mm-hmm. You know, and with that, you know, aside from the fact that it needs to be blocked up better, it could be maybe schemed better, it could be David Johnson running with more patience and better eyes. You know, it's all of us. And, you know, there's no doubt that it needs to be corrected. And, you know, we got to continue to work on things. And you know, whether that's, you know, trying to work on the play action game and some of the things throwing in football that could make you run a little more effectively. There's a lot of different things that we can look at. And I know we're working hard on it right now. And, you know, David Johnson's, I know at some point in time and hopefully sooner than later, is going to have a breakout game.
Cardinals general manager Steve Keim, a guest of Doug and Wolf this morning for his weekly chat as the Cardinals getting ready for week 6, a trip to Minnesota to take on the Vikings.
And that's one of the things that people are looking for in a big way from this Cardinals team is improvement on offense. And how do you get the guys, and you talked about it in the splash, Bick, how do you get the guys that you've counted on so heavily for so long, how do you get them going in what's been a struggling offense? And you heard Steve Keim try to break it down, and it's not a one-person responsibility. It's everybody involved. So, you know, David Johnson wants to pin it all on himself. That's not the case. But the bottom line is it needs to improve, or this is going to be a really, really long season.
Oh, I agree with that. And I look at this, and I see two different things, Vinny. I see Larry Fitzgerald, and how much talent does he have left, and how important is it if he starts getting deeper involved in the offense? Over the last few years, we have seen the best way to lift the energy of the Cardinals at home is to complete a pass to Larry, because everybody gets into it. He gets into it. Suddenly the energy level is up. Same thing on the road. Not as great, but as much as we see and want Josh Rosen to establish connectivity with Christian Kirk and others, you get the idea that maybe finding a more steady repertoire with Larry Fitzgerald would help everybody, especially in a game in Minnesota, Larry's hometown.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see that. The David Johnson thing is another matter, and this is something that I grasped onto between my ears listening to Doug and Wolf this morning. Wolf was saying that eventually David's role on this team needs to morph into more of a leadership role, where if he's on the football field and his offensive line is not getting it done, he is in their face. What I think Wolf is saying is he's playing with more fire on the football field, maybe running harder, maybe running over people, maybe running over his own linemen if he has to. And I started thinking about the David Johnson I've seen this year, and does it look a little more timid than previous versions? I don't know. I don't think so. But I do know this concept of David Johnson trying to increase the production and raise up the people around him. It's a fair point, but it's also asking a guy to be something he's not, which makes him Paul Goldschmidt.
You mean his batting average is going to go down in September?
You know what I mean?
I commend David Johnson for taking the... We played a soundbite earlier this week where he's like, I have to do better. It's all on me. And we both started kind of like chuckling at the same time when we heard that, because that's a ridiculous notion that he's taking on that much responsibility. We've heard coaches in the past few weeks say, David Johnson's too hard on himself. This is an 11-person problem, not a one-person problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's easy to look timid as a running back when you're getting the ball and your first step is, you know, you're running into a defender. There's been very little room to run. There's also been very little creativity in the run game. It's been a lot of up the gut kind of running.
Yeah, it has. I
agree
with that.
Between the center and the guard, one of those gaps.
I agree with that.
And that has not worked yet.
I agree with that.
So that's something to look forward to as well. We keep hearing the coaches promise more in terms of creativity, and it all comes back to execution, obviously. When will this offense start to execute?
Yeah, and I think when you look at this, we don't even have to do any deep dive statistical research to find this out. But if you took a team's two best skill players coming in that are not quarterbacks and ranked them via production,
mm-hmm.
you know, Cardinals, Fitz, and David Johnson would be pretty low on that list because the offense as a whole is not functioning. There needs to be a time when these guys influence football games. And I know it's harder for Larry Fitzgerald because he has to get the ball thrown to him. And it's hard on David Johnson because people up front have to block. To hear what Steve Keim said, it sounds like he thinks maybe David Johnson needs to be more patient. And do you see him rushing into gaps or holes or not waiting for plays to develop? Clearly, he must.
Well, I mean, I think in this offense, again, it's so predicated on what the run blocking looks like ahead of David Johnson. Oh, he could take a handoff. He could do his Lev Bell impersonation and wait and
bounce,
wait.
But and if bounce there's, and bounce.
If there's never a gap opening, it doesn't matter if you're waiting.
Wouldn't you agree that his best run was at the way end of the game when he went around?
Yeah, he ran around the right end.
They don't run enough plays like that right, where they let him use his athleticism.
I remember I had a reaction to that play like, wait, we haven't seen this in a long time. What is this?
He could beat guys to the edge, and give him some...
That resembles a wrinkle.
Right, and give him some room to kind of be able to hit some jump cuts every now and again. That's supposed to be what he's really, really good at as well. Now, the problem is the Vikings have a very good defense. And I don't know if you know this. They've got a guy on their defense with maybe one of the best nicknames in NFL history. Linville Joseph, Big Goon, is his nickname. Big Goon Joseph scored a 64-yard defensive fat guy touchdown against the Eagles. Dude weighs 329 pounds. He ran so fast that they went and clocked his 64-yard touchdown run, and he was going 18 miles an hour, Vinny. EA Sports took notice of this play and upped Big Goon's speed rating on Madden. 12 points to an 80, which ties him with Fletcher Cox.
Wow. Way to go, Big Goon.
That's what I'm saying. 18.2 miles per hour for Big Goon during a 64-yard touchdown run. And he's 329 pounds. That's who the Cardinals are dealing with, Big Goon.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how fast he runs. He doesn't have to run very fast to beat the guy in front of him and make a tackle in the backfield.
Right.
David Johnson, the subject of a lot of this discussion earlier this week, thinks the offense is close to clicking.
Oh, we're close. Definitely close. Like Coach always tells us, there's always, you know, one person, might be me, one person, it might be someone else. It's not like it's a whole organization, whole offense thing. It's usually just one person. And, you know, that one person makes a big impact.
Here is Johnson on facing Minnesota's defense.
Exotic defense. And they'll blitz everyone. Like Kirby says, they have a Vikings jersey on, they're going to blitz. They might pressure the quarterback, corner, safety, linebackers, everyone. Just expect someone to blitz almost on every play. And always expect an exotic front and an exotic defense.
Yeah, their defense has not been great. In fact, we were both kind of taken aback by a conversation we had with a guy who's regularly covering the Vikings in Minnesota. Matthew Collar of 1500 ESPN Twin Cities joined us yesterday. And I don't know if this is just being down on what the Vikings have done through 5 weeks or not being as familiar with what the Cardinals have failed to do in the first 5 weeks.
Right.
But he said this game's not a foregone conclusion.
I think this is one where, yes, the rosters are still, you know, it's still slanted heavily toward the Vikings, but also, you know, Kirk Cousins does have that capability of throwing picks. He's always been a double-digit interception guy. He hasn't done too much of that so far. The fumbles have been an issue out in L.A. and against Buffalo, and special teams has not really been very strong for the Vikings so far. So when you think about those couple of things, yes, I would still expect that the Vikings would win this game, and I think that's the way everyone's looking at it, but the door is definitely open, especially since Josh Allen, a rookie quarterback, did something that rookie quarterbacks almost never do to Mike Zimmer defenses and beat the Vikings.
And I think we would both say, like, Josh Allen's won a couple games for Buffalo. Credit to him. Hasn't put up big numbers in the process. I think in the small samples we have from both of these rookie quarterbacks, Josh Rosen has been more impressive. The statistics are not going to jump off the page, certainly. But if it comes down to a rookie quarterback, I would still take the Cardinals surrounding cast, supporting cast, over Buffalo's.
Oh, yeah, so would I.
So maybe that's the template to follow to see what they did to frustrate Minnesota so bad offensively.
Yeah, and a lot of times what we think about football teams going into the stadium based or in the season based on what they did the year before, football teams rarely kind of stay the same. The Eagles are proof. The Vikings, that game against the Bills might be proof. This might not be an unwinnable game, or as unwinnable as it seems. Because I told you, you look at the schedule, this ranks as the hardest game on paper to me the entire rest of the way. KC 2, Lambeau 3, home at Rams 4, maybe at Seattle 5.
No, they own Seattle.
That's exactly. Right. Right.
We'll have a lot more on Cardinals-Vikings on today's Football Friday show. Join Aaron Maloney and Arizona Sports tomorrow at Volkswagen North Scottsdale from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. We'll be giving away Suns and Coyotes tickets, movie passes, and more, plus hosting an Adopt-a-Dog event in conjunction with Halo Animal Rescue. Head to the events page at arizonasports.com for details, and that's again this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Volkswagen North Scottsdale. Coming up, where is baseball going, and how will the remainder of the postseason shape its immediate future? We'll get into that next. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan
Bickley and Vince Morata.
And yes, the rumors are true. They smoke, they drink, they use bad language in mixed company. They're extremely rich and they can flash more bling than most posses in this room. Rock stars they are, and God bless them for that.
Bickley and Morata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Welcome back, everybody. Bickley, Morata, James Jones speaking to the media. We're going to get him in a little bit. He's already told the media, I don't care about GM titles. I just want to win basketball titles. We'll talk to him. Looking forward to that. A lot of Cardinals stuff coming up. But for now, with a little Major League Baseball, the playoffs resume this evening in Milwaukee. Dodgers at Brewers tomorrow. Astros, Red Sox. On paper, the two best teams in each league have made the Final Four. But what about this postseason in general? I'm spitballing here. So this is really kind of on how the games and how the sport is appealing to people. These four teams combined to win 399 games during the regular season. So, this is high-stakes, elite team, pedigreed baseball. Yet, this whole postseason, I'm not sure, in fact, I'm quite certain, hasn't hit the mark of previous postseasons. And I don't know whether it's because they're not iconic stories like the Cubs or the Indians, or maybe just a lack of great games that we've seen over previous postseasons, or maybe all that stuff just kind of begins now once baseball has shaken out these teams.
Mm-hmm.
But you begin to ask yourself, what exactly are we doing here if the four teams that didn't have to play a one-game playoff are the teams remaining? Yet we've had all these other teams build entire seasons on making the playoffs, and then it's just gone like that. I'm curious how this is playing to people. I wonder if it's hard as a baseball fan to endure this. If you are fans of teams like Colorado, etc. Thoughts on this?
Yeah, I do. I've gone on record several times. I don't like the one game wild card playoff thing, but would you rather have? Would you rather have a carrot put in front of your team at the end of the season, something to compete for? Because you can be disappointed in one playoff game, or you can be disappointed a lot earlier than that because you don't have a chance to advance. So I understand why Major League Baseball did it. I don't think it's going away anytime soon. Mm-hmm. I think they'll go to expanded playoffs before they would go to a reduced playoff field. It's just a matter of how you look at it. It is good for the interest level of the game.
Yeah.
I will say that.
All right. Michael Kay, broadcaster in New York, went off after the Yankees loss. And I think all of this is tied together. Because I think, to me, Vinny, baseball is looking very different to a generation of fans that are most into the sport. And it's looking different on the field with defensive shifts, with strategies, with analytics. Michael Kay, after the Yankees lost in a 5-game series, just went off. And I saw this repeated everywhere. And there were people who are analytics fans who are pointing out, Michael Kay, you're making no sense. You're making no sense at all on any of this. Yet there was an anger to it that resonated with a lot of people who all know that more knowledge is a good thing. Leads to better decision-making for baseball, but is the heart of baseball still there? And that was Michael Kay's entire rant, that you can't quantify a heartbeat. And that's the typical thing people talk about when they hit on analytics. Oh, just throw laptops on the field at every position. Yeah, it's not like that. Baseball players are still determining the outcomes of baseball games.
Yeah,
it's just the game is just changing. You could make an argument that Major League Baseball is changing way more than what NFL football looks like, neutered down from big, vicious hits, helmet-to-helmet hits, and all that.
Yeah, you can blame analytics all you want if you're on the Yankee side of things. They got beat by a better baseball team. Is there an analytic for that? Yeah, look at the win column. I think the biggest issue isn't a reliance on analytics, Bick, or it's not the ignorance of analytics. It's that there's no common ground. There's a very small group of people involved in baseball, whether they're executives, players, fans, whatever, or analysts, that can take the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Either you're old school or you're analytical. And if you're old school, the analytical people say, you're a dinosaur.
And if you're analytical, the old school people say, you're a geek. There's no common ground between the two sides. Why can't you take the best of both worlds, which I think a lot of the organizations are trying to do.
Yeah.
And when they do that, the quote-unquote over-reliance on analytics becomes a scapegoat for people that are frustrated that their team lost.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think you're right about that. The lack of a common ground is pretty obvious to me. And I think that's kind of the disconnect here. And we've talked a lot about just the philosophical shifts in what teams want from their offense and all of that and how it relates to less baseballs actually in play and all of that. Major League batting averages dropped below 250 this year for the first time since 1972. And that was what, coming out of the raised mound era?
Mm-hmm.
So the lack of offense, the defensive shifts, how analytics have changed the art of hitting. And then now you throw on top of it these one-game playoffs where baseball teams, you know, grind and grind and grind, and then it just over like that. We didn't experience it last year. The Rockies did. They atoned for themselves this year, but then flamed out again. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just seems to me like more playoffs make more money, create more interest, create more teams into the sport down the stretch. I just wonder if the game feels as colossal as it did when you had these epic seven-game series.
No, I mean, it doesn't feel as colossal, certainly. The World Series was appointment television for even casual baseball fans. That's not the case anymore. And you can go into the reasons why baseball has become a more regional television sport than ever before. It used to be a national television sport.
Yeah.
Now baseball on national TV doesn't do well, ratings wise. It feels different. It's just a shift. Now, are we going to get back to higher batting averages? I don't know. Are we going to move away from defensive shifts? There's always going to be a better way to conduct business.
How about this? What's interesting now is people believe that the fifth inning in Major League Baseball is the new seventh inning. That everything pivots off the fifth inning. So far in the 2018 postseason, bullpen usage is up to 48.2% of innings. That's a long way from Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling leading you to a World Series title.
Cool. People think I don't like analytics, and I don't.
You go even further
baby.
Back to the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
Where relief pitchers might go weeks without pitching in games.
Look at this. I didn't even know this. The 2001 World Series is actually listed now as a benchmark in how much the game has changed. Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling, Miguel Batista, I love that guy, combined to throw 72.3% of their staff's total innings across 17 postseason games. Only once in that trio's 14 combined playoff starts did one of them fail to complete the seventh inning. Schilling and Johnson, meanwhile, threw five complete games between them.
Not like that anymore. If you're longing for those days to return, it's going to be a while. Coming up next, our guest, who's going to talk to us straight ahead, says if things don't get better in 2 years, he'll quit his job. We'll talk to him about that and more. Danny Gonzalez, defensive coordinator for ASU, will join us next. Bickley Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.